Listen to this, why atheists need God to make their case. The book entitled, I Don't Have Enough Faith to Be an Atheist, great book that he co-authored with Dr. Norman Geisler, and a book that I love right here. We only have 72 copies left of this particular little book. It's called Correct But Not Politically Correct. You need to get this book in light of what's going on today regarding the media spin on sexuality. This is a brilliant book. I love how it's packed with facts and great arguments coming from Frank. The book, and it is also available in the gym after service, Legislating Morality. Can you really do that? Can you really, really legislate morality? You're going to find out by his book, absolutely yes. It happens all the time. And then also, we want all of you to go and make sure that you buy this book, I Don't Have Enough Faith to Be an Atheist. Frank's got it available. Grab it, read it, use it, chew on that, and grow thereby. So Frank Turek is a man who's been exposed to the trenches. He has debated a couple times my favorite, sad to say, deceased atheist, Christopher Hitchens. He has debated many others. You can see him. You can watch his programming, by the way, on DirecTV, channel 378 every week. He's appeared on The O'Reilly Factor, Hannity and Combs, Faith Under Fire, Politically Incorrect, and he writes for townhall.com. He's a United States Navy veteran aviator, and he has and holds two master's degrees, and he graduated from George Washington University. He's president of crossexamine.org. Listen, I'm going to get out of the way. You're about to be super blessed with what, and I got to tell you, I never had met Frank before until Friday, and he and I both share the level of ADD, which means we must have been separated at birth. So God bless you guys. Welcome Frank Turek this morning.
Thanks, brother. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. What I'm going to speak about this morning is extremely controversial. We're going to talk about same-sex marriage. Oh, hate that topic. So it's absolutely critical that you listen closely. Because I don't want you walking out of here thinking I said something I did not say. If you don't listen closely, the results can be disastrous.
Das hier ist mein Sektor.
Das hier ist das wichtigste Gerät, das wissen wir.
Das Gerät, das Gerät.
Überlebensradar.
This is the German Coast Guard.
We're thinking.
What are you thinking about?
So what are you guys thinking about? You guys ready to go? Now, whenever you start to talk about a controversial issue, in fact, if somebody asks your opinion on a controversial issue, you should ask this question back. Do you consider yourself a tolerant person? And why would you ask that question? Because, obviously, the person's going to have to say, yes, well, of course I'm a tolerant person. Then you can say, great, because if I say something you don't agree with, then you're going to tolerate it, right? In other words, you've just defanged them. Because if they get all ornery with you after you express your opinion, after just saying they're tolerant, they're going to realize it's a big contradiction. Unfortunately, I've noticed that the people who say they're fighting for tolerance are often the most intolerant out there. So ask the question, do you consider yourself a tolerant person? And before we actually get into this subject, I want to ask you this question. Regarding Jesus, are Christians commanded to be tolerant? Did Jesus or any of the apostles say we have to be tolerant? No, why? Because tolerance is too weak. Tolerance says, hold your nose and put up with them. Love says, reach out and help them. And in order to truly love people, sometimes you can't tolerate what they're doing. We all know this as parents, right? If we tolerate everything our child wants to do, are we loving? No, the only way you can be loving is to stand against evil, because you don't want your child to hurt himself or herself or anybody else. So true love sometimes requires you to stand in opposition to what people want to do. It requires it. And you can say to somebody, oh, I'm with you, whatever you want to do is fine. That's not love. That's called false compassion. True compassion is, I love you so much that I want to stand in opposition to what you want to do because I love you so much, and I'll stand in opposition to that even if you hate me for it. Because that's what love does. So, what does it mean to love? It means we are called to love individuals with truth, and that often means opposing behavior that is harmful to them and others. And I think on this issue of homosexuality and same-sex marriage, as politically incorrect as it is to say, and I'm here to be correct, not politically correct, this is harmful behavior. And in fact, we'll see why here in a minute, but before we get into that, what did Jesus say about marriage? Because a lot of people say, well, Jesus said nothing about it. Actually, Jesus said a lot about it. In fact, here's what he said about marriage in particular. He said, have you not read that he who created them from the beginning made them male and female? Male and female. Reality is built around the male-female complementarianism to procreate and perpetuate and stabilize society. That's the reason we have marriage. And of course, from a Christian perspective, marriage is an illustration of our ultimate union to Christ. So gender is essential to marriage. Of course, race isn't, but gender is essential to marriage, and Jesus is pointing this out right here. And a lot of people will say, well, Jesus said nothing about homosexuality. For three reasons, that's a bad argument. Reason number one, he didn't say anything about rape or incest either, but does that mean he was for it? No, just because someone doesn't say anything specifically on it doesn't mean they're against it or for it. Secondly, Jesus actually did speak against homosexual behavior. Whenever he used the phrase sexual immorality, what he meant was any behavior, sexual behavior, outside of the behavior of a man and a woman inside of marriage. So sexual immorality covered the gambit. It covered adultery, bestiality, homosexuality, incest, anything that was outside marriage between a man and a woman. And as you know, Jesus spoke a lot on sexual immorality. Thirdly, Jesus wrote the entire Bible as the second person of the eternal Trinity. He inspired the entire Bible. So if it's not just the red letters that you read in there as to what Jesus is inspiring. Jesus is God who inspired the entire Bible. So don't buy into this idea that because Jesus didn't use the word homosexuality that he hadn't spoken about it, because it's not in your red letter edition of the Bible. All right? That's kind of the start. Now let's get into this. First question, what is the same-sex marriage debate about? And let me point out to you, regardless of what the Supreme Court said, this debate is just beginning. So we're going to deal with that first. Secondly, the four P's and the four Q's. If you don't get anything else out of what we talk about here this morning, if you can remember these four P's and four Q's, and by the way, I don't care whether you're for same-sex marriage or against it, these four P's and four Q's will help you talk about this particular topic, I think, intelligently. Thirdly, why does the law matter? Why should we care? As Christians or even non-Christians, why should we care about the law? Number four, who could same-sex marriage possibly hurt? And then if we get time, I don't know if we'll have time, I want to answer just a couple of these objections like, well, we're born this way and we don't have equal rights, all right? You guys ready to go? All right, let's start here at point one. What is the same-sex marriage debate about? Well, let me point out what it is not about. It is not about equality or equal rights. It's not about discrimination against a class of people. It's not about denying homosexuals the ability to commit one another. You know, you could commit to one another regardless of what the government said, right? You could commit yourself to somebody else till death do you part. You don't need the government involved. So it's not denying anybody anything. It's not about love or private relationships. It's not about tolerance or intolerance, bigotry or homophobia. It's not about sexual orientation or being born a certain way. It's not about race or the civil rights struggle. It's not about interracial marriage. It's not about heterosexuals and divorce, although I will say heterosexuals have done a really good number on marriage by allowing no-fault divorce. But of course, that's not an argument for same-sex marriage. Why? Because if your car has one flat tire, giving it a second flat tire doesn't help it. We need to affirm marriage. We need to make it harder to get a divorce, not easier. Also, it has nothing to do with the separation of church and state. It has nothing really to do with religion either. And actually, it doesn't really have anything to do with marriage either. You go, wait, well, what is this debate about then? If it's not about any of those things, and it's not even about marriage, well, why isn't it about marriage? Well, fewer than 10% of homosexuals get married when they're given the opportunity, and those that do break up at much higher rates than heterosexuals. So the homosexual community isn't even really interested in marriage. Statistically, they're not. Well, then what is this debate about then? What is it about? This is the interactive portion of the program. Does Pastor Jack ever do this? Does he ever ask you questions? What is this debate about really then? What? No, it's way beyond tolerance. Power? Someone said it over here. Acceptance. This is really about validation and normalization. This is what Andrew Sullivan, who is a very articulate proponent of same-sex marriage, said almost 20 years ago. And he's absolutely right. Here's what he said. If nothing else were done and gay marriage were legalized, 90% of the political work necessary to achieve gay and lesbian equality will have been achieved. It's ultimately the only reform that matters. He's absolutely right. This is really about validation and normalization, because if you equate same-sex relationships with heterosexual relationships, what you're saying is there's no moral or social difference. And now homosexuality as a behavior is seen as the moral and legal equivalent of heterosexual behavior. That's really what this is about. And we'll see that when you promote this, you are creating really moral and social chaos. We're going to get into it here in just a minute. So that's point one. It's really about validation and normalization. Now, what about the four P's and the four Q's? If you can just get your mind around the four P's and the four Q's here. Again, I think you'll be able to talk about this issue very, very intelligently. First of all, the first P is, what is the purpose of marriage from a government perspective? Why is the government involved in marriage at all? Let's leave religion out of it for a second. Let's just talk about, why would a government care that two people come together? What reason do you think it is? Money? Well, it's not just money. Why would a government care that two people come together? So we can have contracts without marriage, not without calling it marriage. We have contracts all the time without calling it marriage. What's the real reason? Procreation, I'm hearing it. It's actually, you're getting close. The real reason that the government, or the purpose the government is involved in marriage, is to perpetuate and stabilize society. In fact, natural marriage between a man and a woman, creates children, raises children by a mom and a dad, which is obviously best. It civilizes men, it protects women, and it perpetuates and stabilizes society. Marriage between a man and a woman is literally the foundation of civilization. In fact, marriage between a man and a woman predates government and predates the church. Of the three institutions set up by God, the first was marriage, the second was government, the third was the church. So governments don't redefine marriage or define marriage. Government should recognize what was in place before governments even began. It is the foundation of civilization. So what am I really saying here? This has nothing to do with love or feelings. You hear all this, well, love wins and all. That's not why the government's involved in marriage. I mean, I love my son, but I don't marry him. I love a lot of people. In fact, most of the people you love, you don't marry. Don't say to me that the only person you did marry you don't love. Because is that what you're thinking here? Where do we get the idea that love is all about feelings anyway? Why do we get that? A pastor friend of mine preaching last week on this said, where do we get the idea that love and feelings are, that's what love is, it's just all about feelings. Let me tell you what love is. My mother lost her mind to Alzheimer's. For the last 5 or 6 years of her life, she didn't even know my dad. But he cared for her 24/7. That's love. It's not about feelings. I'm sure there are many days he didn't feel like taking care of a woman who didn't even know him. But he did it anyway. That's what love is. It's not about feelings. And marriage, from a societal perspective, from a government perspective, isn't about love. When you go for a marriage license, they don't say, do you really love her? You really love him? They don't care. So the first P is, what's the purpose of marriage from a government perspective? Here are the next three P's. Laws address behaviors, not persons. So when we're talking about laws, we're not discriminated against persons, but we are discriminated against behaviors, and that's what all laws do. And a government can do only one of three things with any behavior. It can prohibit a behavior, permit a behavior, or promote a behavior. That's all you can do if you're a government. You can prohibit it, you can permit it, or you can promote it. Now, for 5,000 plus years, governments have promoted marriage between a man and a woman because it brings all these benefits. It perpetuates and stabilizes society. And recently in our country, we've prohibited, of course, relationships that are very harmful, like polygamy, incest, and pedophilia. And for many years, we've permitted homosexual relationships and unmarried heterosexual relationships. What we're doing now, however, is we're moving from permit to promote when it comes to homosexual relationships. We're promoting them like we would natural marriage. That's going to be a problem. In fact, we're going to talk about the problem here in a couple minutes. But let me ask you this. If the government promotes marriage between a man and a woman, are people who decide that they don't want to participate in that institution being discriminated against? No, not at all. Their relationships are permitted, but they're not promoted. And if just because your relationship isn't promoted doesn't mean you're being discriminated against. In fact, let's use an analogy from vocations. The government promotes police work. Some of you don't know this, but there are many police officers in this room right now, and they're packing. Watch out! I don't know who they are, but they're here. And they're here to protect you and everybody else from trouble. And they bring all these benefits to a society. They protect citizens, they enforce laws, they keep peace, they keep commerce moving, they're a visible deterrent, and they stabilize society. Now, we permit most other vocations, and we prohibit other vocations, like being a hitman, right? We prohibit that because it's harmful. Let me ask you a question. If your neighbor decides to become a police officer, and the government's promoting that particular vocation, and you decide to be some other vocation, say you're an accountant, you're in a permit vocation, are you being discriminated against because the government doesn't promote you being an accountant? No, it's the same thing with marriage. Just because you are not, your relationship is not being promoted, doesn't mean you're being discriminated against. So just remember these four P's, the purpose of marriage, and prohibit, permit, promote. Now that we're moving from permit to promote, it's going to be a problem, and you'll see the problem here in just a few minutes. And what can you do about it? We'll get into that. Now, I know what I'm about to say here is shocking. But Joe Biden said something that was really true. I know that's hard to believe. Now, I like Joe Biden. He's a nice guy. I don't agree with him politically, but some of you in here will remember this. How many of you remember the old Mary Tyler Moore show? He is Ted Knight. Are you with me? Can't you see him before he goes out on the, you know, he's about to go out and speak somewhere. He looks in the mirror and he goes, "You handsome devil." Well, Joe Biden was on Meet the Depressed in May of 2012. And this is when he came out and said that he's for same-sex marriage. And the next day, President Obama came out for it. And here's what Vice President Biden said. He said, "I think that Americans have been influenced by shows like Glee and Queer Eye for the Straight Guy and Will and Grace, these sitcoms that you see on TV, and they've been able to accept homosexuality because they see these shows." And you know what? Joe Biden is absolutely right. The media has really desensitized people to this issue and got people to support the behavior of homosexuality. But I want you to think about this for a second. I mean, what he's saying is undeniably true. But do you realize that people are making their decision about what they think about the foundation of civilization from what they learn on sitcoms? You believe how crazy that is? I mean, that would be like me. Suppose I need an operation because I'm sick, and I go to a guy and I say, "Hey, can you operate on me? I need this operation." And he goes, "Look, I'm not a doctor." And I go, "That's okay. I know you've watched every episode of General Hospital." That's crazy. But that's where we are. People are making their decisions based on popular culture, media, music, rock stars, Hollywood people. We're making our decisions on the foundation of civilization from what they say? Are you kidding me? In fact, here are some questions you can ask, and here are the four Q's on this particular issue. Suppose somebody, you're talking to somebody, and they say they support it. You know, what do you think? First question you ought to ask, I think, is this. If same-sex marriage had serious negative, unintended consequences, would you reconsider your position? Just ask that question. See if they're open. If they say no, move on to somebody else. They're not open. Right? If it had serious, unintended negative consequences, because there are a lot of unintended consequences, some of them are intended, by the way. But that's the first question. The second question is this. Are heterosexual and homosexual relationships the same or different? No matter how the person answers, they're going to be in trouble. Because if they say they're the same, which is probably what they're going to say, first of all, you're going to say, "Have you ever heard of the birds and the bees?" But you can leave that aside. You could say this. If they're the same, why are you arguing for same-sex marriage? I mean, if the relationships are absolutely the same, then why not just marry somebody the opposite sex? If they're the same, right? The very reason you're arguing for same-sex marriage is because you know there's a difference between the sexes. That's why you want same-sex marriage. You want to marry a male or a female or somebody of the same sex. Just like you, because you know marrying somebody the opposite sex isn't the same. So if they relent then and say, "Okay, you're right, they're not the same, they're different," well, then you say, well, you treat the same things the same, you treat different things differently. You don't treat unequal things equally. Now, what I mean by unequal, I don't mean the people are unequal, I mean the behavior is unequal. A man and a woman coming together is not the same as two men or two women. It's just not. It's not the same biologically. It's not the same procreatively. Not the same socially. Not the same morally. It's not the same. It's not the same emotionally even. It's different. And you treat equal things equally. You treat different things differently. Notice I didn't say people are unequal. All people are equal. All people are made in the image of God. All people are God's creation. Everybody deserves equal rights, but not every behavior needs to be treated equally. And these are different behaviors. You know, I've noticed that generally, not always, but generally conservatives want to adjust their behavior to fit reality, whereas liberals want to adjust reality to fit their behavior. You notice that? There are people out there actually saying now that they can't control their sexual behavior, but they can control their gender. It's exactly the opposite. You can control your sexual behavior. You can't control your gender. All right, two more questions. What would be the effects in society if everyone lived faithfully in natural marriage? That's marriage between a man and a woman. I call it natural marriage, not traditional marriage, because it's not just traditional, it's natural. It's based upon the complementarianism of the man and the woman coming together to perpetuate and stabilize society. What if everyone lived faithfully in that? What if everyone got married to the opposite sex and lived faithfully till death do them part? What would happen to our social problems? Many of them would virtually evaporate. Abortion would go away. Much child abuse would go away. Crime would decrease dramatically because the people committing most of the crimes come from broken homes, which means taxes would go down because you don't need a bigger government when the family stays together. It's only when the family breaks down do you need a bigger government, which means the economy would be better, which means prosperity would go up. This is why I can't respect people who say they're liberal in terms of social issues, but they're conservative because of on fiscal issues. The two are connected. The reason we're having fiscal problems is because we're having moral problems. The government has to bloat itself when we're immoral to try and take care of all the immorality. And that's why taxes go up, and that's why prosperity goes down. So the two are interrelated. Morality and fiscal issues are related. So you ask that question, the obvious answer, if everyone did that, we'd be in much better shape. Next question. What would be the effects in society if everyone lived faithfully in same-sex marriage? It would be the end of society in a generation or two. Now, I'm not saying that the current ruling will cause everybody to live in a same-sex relationship. I'm only asking the question to point out that there's an obvious difference in outcome between the two types of relationships. Same-sex relationships are not the same as opposite-sex relationships, no matter how much we protest otherwise. They're different. So what do? You treat the same things the same, you treat different things differently. All right, let's move on now to why does the law matter? Why should we care as Christians? Or, even if you're a non-Christian, why should you care? And when people say, and Pastor Jack gets this all the time, you know, Pastor Jack is a leader among pastors. And some of the pastors he talks to, he'll say, hey, man, you really got to speak the truth on this issue. And they'll tell him, I just preached the word. I just preach the gospel. I just want to get people saved. Now, I'm all for that, and I know Pastor Jack is as well. But when people say they can't get involved in any kind of moral issue in the political realm, I just show them one picture, and here is the picture. Let me ask you, what is this? What is that? Does anyone know what that is? That's the Korean Peninsula. Notice the stark difference between South Korea and North Korea. South Korea is one of the most Christianized countries in the world. It has the gospel, it has freedom, it obviously has prosperity, it also has electricity, apparently. North Korea, on the other hand, is a concentration camp. There is one major reason for the difference between South and North Korea. What is it? No, it's not the gospel. Believe it or not, it's not the gospel. What's the broader category here? Government, you're close. The major reason for the difference between South and North Korea is politics. The South has political freedom, the North does not. Look at the outcome. Now, when people out there saying, I just preach the gospel, that's all I want to do. If you don't think politics are important, you don't think the gospel is important. Because can you do what we're doing in this room right now in North Korea? Not legally. Yeah, if you don't think politics are important, go to some of the countries I've been to. Iran, Saudi Arabia, China. You can't do what we're doing in this room right now, or Pastor Jack does on his radio show every week, in those countries. Why not? Because politically they've ruled it out. And I submit to you that one day, unless Christians wake up, the government's going to come to this church, shut those doors, and say, you all go home. Because You don't have this freedom anymore. Oh, we got the First Amendment. What if they ignore the First Amendment like they ignore the rest of the Constitution, which they've been doing? You better wake up. It's coming. In fact, if you think about this, laws affect, politics affect virtually everything you do. They affect your freedom, your church, your children, your family, your health, your money, your business, your property, your school, your home, your security, your safety, the poor, the unborn, the gospel, virtually everyone and everything. The laws that are made in Sacramento, the laws that are made here in Chino Hills, the laws that are made in Washington affect what you do every day. And they affect the gospel too. That's why you need to be involved. If for no other reason, to protect religious freedom. There's another aspect to this we need to be aware of. I'm going to ask you guys a question. Who is this? This is Britney Spears. Now, Britney Spears got into a lot of trouble because of this picture. What was the trouble she got into? She is a moral monster. Why? Because she's got a baby who is not in a safety restraint harness. You notice that? Now, people today think that this is wholly immoral. But 40 years ago, this was not a problem at all. In fact, I'm originally from New Jersey. Forget about it. And my dad used to put me on his lap and we would steer through town. In fact, Bruce Springsteen has a song about this. Then my dad would put me on his lap and we'd steer through town, right in Asbury Park, right where we're near where I'm from. We used to do this all the time, and you remember this, you are old enough. You remember when you used to go on those vacations in the wood-sided station wagon? You remember that? Right? Mom and Dad be in the front seat, and the kids would be crawling all over the car while you're going 70 miles an hour down the highway, and every once in a while, Dad would turn around and say, "You kids better knock it off back there, or I'm going to come back there and knock a few heads together," right? You were never strapped in. In fact, Mom and Dad weren't even wearing a seatbelt. Now, if you don't strap your kid in like he's about to take off in the space shuttle, you're evil. What changed? Law changed. We saw too many kids get maimed or killed, and so we said, you got to strap these kids in. And now we think you're a moral monster if you do this. What changed? The law changed. You see, the issue here is the law is a great teacher. Many people think whatever is legal is moral and whatever is illegal is immoral. Slavery, same thing. 150 years ago, our country was split on slavery. How many people today do you know who think slavery is a good idea, morally? Hardly anyone. What changed? Are we more religious now or less religious now than 150 years ago? We're less, yet we have a better moral view on slavery. Why? Because the law changed. Same thing is true on abortion. 50 state laws against abortion in 1973. We had a consensus. It was wrong. Then 7 unelected justices in black robes overturned the will of the people in all 50 states. Now we're about evenly split. What changed? The law changed. Many people think whatever is legal is moral and whatever is illegal is immoral. And people can now hide behind, well, it's legal, it must be okay. Same thing's going to happen here with same-sex marriage. The law is going to teach people that the two relationships are the same when we all know basic biology says they're not the same. Talk about the people who ignore science. You Christians are called the scientific illiterate ones. When the people on the other side of this issue claim to be all about science and they're ignoring the most basic science in the world, that there are men and women. Now you say, wait a minute, Frank, what about the separation of church and state? Separation of church and state has nothing to do with this at all. In fact, this is not about church and state at all. This has nothing to do with imposing a religious viewpoint on people. There's a difference between religion and morality. Religion has to do with our duty to God. Morality has to do with our duty to one another. And here's the newsflash. All laws legislate morality. We're not trying to impose a religious point of view. We're not trying to tell people what religion to belong to when we say men and women are made for one another and that's what we ought to promote in society. That's not just a religious view. That's a moral view. We're not telling people where, when, how, or if to go to church. That would be legislating religion. But we are telling people how they ought to treat one another, and that's legislating morality, and all laws legislate morality. Every law declares one behavior right and the opposite behavior wrong, even on this issue of same-sex marriage. Some people are saying, no, marriage is between a man and a woman, and that should be the moral point of view we put in our laws. Others are saying, no, we have a moral right to same-sex marriage. Well, that's a moral position too. These are conflicting moralities. The question is, whose morality would be put into place? And when people say, well, we ought not legislate your morality, I say, don't legislate my morality. I didn't make this up. This isn't my morality. I didn't make up the fact that men were made for women and women were made for men, and when they come together, they can procreate and nurture the next generation. I didn't make that up. I didn't make up the fact that murder is wrong, that abortion is wrong, that theft is wrong, that rape is wrong. These aren't my morals. They're not mine. I didn't make them up. I'm just recognizing them. So let's not legislate my morality. Let's not legislate your morality. Let's legislate the morality. The one Thomas Jefferson said was self-evident. We hold these truths to be self-evident because, what? All men are created equal and endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights. Among these are life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness. Why did he put life first, by the way? Because the right to life is the right to all other rights. If you don't have life, you don't have anything. So, fine. Don't legislate your morality or my morality. Let's just legislate the morality. And everybody knows the morality. What we tend to do is we suppress it because we want to go our own way. All right, so why does the law matter? Because it teaches people right and wrong. And obviously it can also strong-arm people into doing things that are against God or against conscience. And we'll see what that means here in just a minute. Now, who could same-sex marriage hurt? Let me ask you this question. Virtually every social problem we have can be traced back to a problem in a family. True or false? That's true. Next question. True or false? Every child deserves a mother and a father. True. Doesn't mean every child gets one, but every child deserves one. This man is David Blankenhorn. He's a liberal Democrat. He wrote a book in 2007 called The Future of Marriage. He's for so-called gay rights, but not for same-sex marriage. And here's why. Here's what he said. Across history and cultures, marriage's single most fundamental idea is that every child needs a mother and a father. Changing marriage to accommodate same-sex couples would nullify this principle in culture and law. Why? Because the law's a great teacher. Because when you equate the two relationships and say they're the same, then everybody starts thinking they're the same, even though they're really not. And what marriage does here, same-sex marriage, it divorces children from marriage. In fact, he went on to say this, one can believe in same-sex marriage. One can believe that every child deserves a mother and a father. One cannot believe both. If you believe every child deserves a mother and a father, you shouldn't be for same-sex marriage. Actually, it's not really same-sex marriage. What is it now? There really isn't two types of marriage. There's not same-sex marriage and natural marriage. You know what it is now? It's genderless. Marriage is genderless. Now when you go for a marriage license, it just says partner A, partner B. There's no gender. Well, if there's no gender, then what does marriage have to do with children? Nothing. Do we have any research on this from countries that have gone down this road prior to us? Yeah, we do. Stanley Kurtz pointed out this. Scandinavian gay marriage has driven home the message that marriage itself is outdated and that virtually any family form, including out-of-wedlock parenthood, is acceptable. Marriage in Scandinavian countries has virtually disappeared because people no longer get married to have children. Why? Because marriage is not connected to children, yet they still have children. So what happens? Children are born out of wedlock. That's a disaster for them. Parents don't tend to stay together when they're not married. Why? Because the law is a great teacher. In fact, if you want to put it in one sentence, here's the problem. Same-sex marriage hurts children. It makes marriage a genderless institution, just about coupling and the romantic desires of adults. Marriage is just now about the romantic desires of adults. I get to marry whom I love. Government doesn't care who you love. Government cares about perpetuating and stabilizing society. That's what marriage is about. That's what the government should care about, not who you love. And it divorces children from marriage and divorces some children from either their mom or their dad. Here's the problem with same-sex relationships. They always, always, always deny their children under their care either a mother or a father. And if people are going to say, well, it's just two moms can be just as good as two dads. What do you mean by good, number one? And number two, no mother can be a father and no father can be a mother. See, there's not parenting, there's mothering and fathering. Now, I say that with all knowledge that there are many people in this room that are heroically bringing up children as a single parent. And you may be doing a great job at it, but statistically showing you're at a disadvantage. That's just the facts of nature. It's very difficult. It's difficult enough with two parents. And when you got three kids like we do, there's always one kid open. There's mothering and fathering. In fact, here is a way of putting it. Natural marriage is not bigotry, it's biology. That's just the way things are. In fact, I heard this morning one way of putting this. The problem with same-sex marriage is that it institutionalizes missing parents. Think about that. It promotes missing parents. It says it's okay to be a missing parent in a child's life. If you think that's a good thing, I don't know what else to tell you. It's never a good thing to be a missing parent. Sorry for this cheery presentation. All right, also, this is never brought up anymore, but this is from the CDC. This is the politically correct CDC still admits this, the Center for Disease Control. That 85% of all male sexually transmitted AIDS cases are from homosexual contact. That homosexual men have an HIV infection rate that's 60 times higher than the general public. That 60% of all syphilis cases are from homosexual men and bisexual men. They only comprise 2% of the population, but 60% of the diseases with regard to syphilis come from that type of relationship. There's a higher incidence of colon and rectal cancer. There's also a shorter lifespan, anywhere between 8 and 20 years. And lesbians have a much higher breast and cervical cancer rates and higher hepatitis C rates. Also, the suicide rates are higher in that community, as you know. And it's not because of homophobia. Because in societies that celebrate same-sex relationships, the suicide rate is still higher. And if somebody says to you, if you don't accept me, I'm going to commit suicide. There are other psychological problems. Because you as Christians can say the same thing, right? If you don't accept me as a Christian, I'm going to commit suicide. What's the other side going to say? You've got psychological problems. If you're going to commit suicide because I disagree with you. Now, I don't want to belittle the problem. We need to reach out to people of all sexual orientations, so to speak. Because we're all broken. Every one of us in this room is broken sexually in some way. We have to have the attitude that someone put it this way. Evangelism is just one beggar showing another beggar where the food is. We're all beggars. But these health problems are never brought up anymore. But now what we've done is we're encouraging people to get involved in relationships. We're promoting people. We're telling people it's a good thing to get involved in relationships that yield these outcomes. That's not loving. And let's go to Massachusetts, which has had same-sex marriage in our culture the longest. Parents now have no right to know or to opt out when homosexuality is being taught in schools, K through 12. In fact, this man actually was imprisoned because he went and he said, look, I have a kindergartner. I want to know when you're talking about homosexuality. They said, you have no right to know that. Same-sex marriage is the law of the land here in Massachusetts, and you have no right to know that. And he was jailed overnight. In fact, one administrator in Massachusetts schools said this, the goal is to reach kids before they absorb their parents' values. By middle school, it's too late. These are competing values. There's no middle ground here. Are you going to stand up for the values, or are you just going to let other people impose their values? Also, taxpayer money now goes to advocacy groups to promote homosexuality in Massachusetts schools. As of a few years ago, they were the only group to get an increase. Everyone else took a budget cut, but the homosexuality groups got the budget increase. Businesses must now give benefits to same-sex couples. Doesn't matter whether you're a Christian businessman or not. You don't have any rights anymore. Businesses must now perform same-sex weddings. And adoption agencies must now provide children to homosexuals. Catholic Charities in Massachusetts, Illinois, and the District of Columbia said, look, in Massachusetts, they said there's 90 adoption agencies in Massachusetts. We're just one of them. We need an exemption. We cannot give children to homosexual couples. It's against our religion. It's against our conscience. Can you give us an exemption? What do you think the government of Massachusetts said? No, you can't have an exemption. It's the law of the land here. You know what Catholic Charities did? To their credit, they closed. Now they're, well, yeah, we're clapping. They stood up. The problem is now kids are not being served because of homosexuality. Same thing in Illinois. Same thing in the District of Columbia. Now, who knows? It could go nationwide now. You thought this was all about tolerance and live and let live, didn't you? No. No, it's not about that at all. You don't see it our way and we will hurt you. Religious liberties are being usurped. These two politicians who will go unnamed have shifted their language recently from freedom of religion to freedom of worship. Freedom of religion, according to the First Amendment, exercise of religion, free exercise of religion, means not just that you can come here Sunday and worship, it means that you can apply what you learn here out there the other 6 days of the week. These politicians are saying no. You can believe anything you want while in your church, but you can't act at it outside your church. Pastor Jack can come up here and say anything he wants, just as long as you don't obey it. That's the difference between freedom of worship and freedom of religion. In fact, this is what Justice Kennedy said in the same-sex marriage decision a few weeks ago. Check out this language. This is the second to last paragraph in his diabolical opinion, in my view. Had nothing to do with the Constitution. I don't have time to get into this, but I have a couple of columns on this. One is called Love Didn't Win, It Was Redefined. And another column relating to the 14th Amendment, you can go look them up at townhall.com or our website, crossexamined.org. They're posted there, crossexamined.org with a D on the end of it. Here's what Kennedy said in the opinion. Finally, it must be emphasized that religions and those who adhere to religious doctrines may continue to advocate with utmost severe conviction that by divine precept, same-sex marriage should not be condoned. Notice the word advocate. He's saying you can advocate that you're not for same-sex marriage, but nothing about exercising your rights when it comes to living out your religious worldview. You can advocate it all you want, but now you're going to have to celebrate this. And you, if you think this isn't happening, well, first of all, let me point out what Kai Feldbaum said, who is a lesbian activist appointed by President Obama. On the inevitable conflict between the competing values of so-called gay rights and religious rights. Here's what she said. I'm having a hard time coming up with any case in which religious liberty should win. Just ask the Kleins. Do you know about the Kleins? Melissa and Aaron Klein. Just one of many examples. We don't have time to go into other examples. They were just fined by the state of Oregon $135,000 for refusing to participate in a same-sex wedding by providing a cake for it. $135,000. They had a fundraising campaign for them. GoFundMe shut them down because apparently these are criminals and GoFundMe can't, you know, they can't raise money for criminals. They went onto a Christian site. So far as of Friday, they've raised $372,000. But of course, that's not enough because they have kids and their business is done now. All in the name of tolerance, inclusion, and diversity. There are other examples. Look at this example. This guy was fired for writing a book. Just months after being fired from Cisco Systems in California for an anti-gay marriage book, Christian consultant... Yeah, I wrote this book. And I was doing training for Cisco and Bank of America back in 2011. This book had nothing to do with what I was teaching them. They loved the classes I was teaching. I was teaching classes on leadership. And they fired me because I had written this book. Somebody had discovered I had written this book, and they fired me over it. Now, they could fire me because I wasn't an employee, I was a vendor. They could fire me for any reason. And by the way, I support their right to fire me. But what I don't support is them going around telling everyone they're inclusive and diverse, because they're not. If you don't see it their way, you're out. That's not inclusion and diversity, that's exclusion. And we went public with this because we did not get a very favorable response from them. And in fact, if you want to read a column about this, I wrote a column on townhall.com called Sex at Work. And it explains what happened. If you want to read about it, go to townhall.com and look for it there. Do not put sex at work in your Google search engine. Just warning you right now. Okay? Go to townhall.com and look for it. All right? What I'm saying here is religious freedom is going away. You need to protect religious freedom. Because one day, as I said, unless you do, this man's going to walk up on this pulpit and they're going to put him in handcuffs and take him away. You think I'm making this up? You think religious freedom is the norm? No, it's not. In most countries, they don't have religious freedom. It needs to be protected. And not just for him to preach, but for you to live. Not just for him to be here on Sunday, but him to be out there the other 6 days of the week, and you to be out there the other 6 days of the week. This isn't just about protecting churches and what they do. It's about protecting church members, Christians. You know, it's too bad Pastor Jack's not a Muslim. Did I just say that? I'm glad he's not a Muslim, but you get my idea. If he was a Muslim, he could preach anything he wanted to, right? Due to political correctness. Christians, I'm telling you, if you want to protect the gospel and protect your right to live out your religious freedom, you better get involved. Who's going to protect the children? If not you, who's going to protect the children? Who's going to do it? Not just children in marriage, but how about the unborn? It's time for the reborn to protect the unborn. Don't you think? And now Planned Parenthood is cutting up babies and selling them? And what are we going to do about it? We better do something. Who else is going to do something about it? This is Nazi-like. And we're just sitting here all comfortable. Last thing. I don't have time to get into this in any detail because we're about out of time, but born this way argument, you know when people say that to me? First question I ask is how? How is this gay gene passed on? Secondly, even if it's true, it doesn't matter because we're all born with an orientation toward bad behavior. I mean, think about this. I'm born with an orientation toward bad behavior. I'm depraved. You're depraved too. We're all depraved. And to say that just because I was born with this inclination, that somehow acting on this inclination is a good thing, doesn't follow. I mean, I could equally say, look, I was just born with the anti-gay gene. Don't blame me. No, I don't want to belittle what people feel because people have attractions and they feel like the attraction is their identity. I understand that. But your attractions are not your identity. Your identity is who you are in Christ. It's not what you feel about who you should sleep with. Your identity is not your sexual inclination. There are attractions and there are actions. You may not be able to control your attractions, but you can control your actions. All of us need to be able to do that. And equal rights, look, everybody has equal rights. Every person has the equal right to marry the person of the opposite sex. That applies to everybody. The law doesn't treat anybody differently. Everybody has the same equal right. You know, same-sex marriage advocates don't believe in equal rights for polygamists, do they? If that's their definition of equal rights. Or the incestuous. I'm not saying they're the same relationships. What I'm saying is the logic used to condone same-sex marriage is the same logic that can be used to condone polygamy. In fact, it's already in the courts. It's already coming. In fact, even the dissents in the Supreme Court case, Justice Roberts, Alito, Scalia, and Thomas all said, in fact, I think it was Roberts' dissent, he said, why two? You've arbitrarily thrown two people in there and said, it's got to be two. Why two? If it's not about men and women being complementary and procreating, why two? Why not three, four, five? Why not marry as many as you want? We're in a brave new world now, and we need to do something about it. There's a lot more that is covered in the book, this little book that Pastor Jack nicely endorsed, Correct, Not Politically Correct, How Same-Sex Marriage Hurts Everyone. It's in the gym. And this presentation I just gave you is called The 4 P's and the 4 Q's. It's a one-hour presentation. It's on the table back there as well. And if you want to go deeper into these other issues, I Don't Have Enough Faith to Be an Atheist, and a 12-part DVD series that shows you why Christianity is true. And there's a workbook you can get with it in 12, 20 to 40-minute bites. Check that out. And then the new book, Stealing from God, Why Atheists Need God to Make Their Case. We're going to talk about stealing from God in the second service. In the third service, we're going to talk about I Don't Have Enough Faith to Be an Atheist. Now you say, Frank, I can't remember everything you said here, and I don't want to buy any of those books. That's fine. There's our website, crossexamine.org. I'm going to give you now a 4 minute and 53 second video to end this whole thing. It's going to summarize what I just said. Then Pastor Jack and the worship team are going to close us out. This video you can see on our website, crossexamine.org. It's also on YouTube. You can share it. You should send it to everyone because the fight has just begun. Here we go.
It's not just because two people love each other. No, it's for the perpetuation and stabilization of our society. This understanding of marriage is rooted in the biological facts of nature. But do we really have any compelling reason to maintain such a narrow definition? Or has the time come for the government to revise and expand our understanding of marriage to include same-sex couples? When it comes to the behavior of its citizens, a government has only three options. It can promote, permit, or prohibit their behavior. For example, the state promotes police work, permits most occupations, but prohibits drug dealing. Why? Because dealing drugs harms society, while police work greatly benefits society. In the same way, our government promotes natural marriage, permits most relationships, but prohibits incest and pedophilia. Why? Because incest and pedophilia harm our communities, while natural marriage benefits our communities. And here's how. Natural marriage creates children, it best raises children, it protects women, it civilizes men, it lowers crime, poverty, and welfare, which in turn reduces government spending and deficits. In short, natural marriage perpetuates and stabilizes society. Everyone benefits from that, even those who don't get married. Now, let's look at same-sex marriage. What benefits does it provide? Same-sex marriage offers no benefit for society as a whole. In fact, it hurts us. Promoting same-sex marriage changes the very purpose of the civil institution of marriage. Natural marriage centers on bringing up the next generation, on raising children to become good citizens. Same-sex marriage merely validates sex partners. We know, statistically, that natural marriage creates the best possible family for children. If we alter the primary purpose of marriage, the losers will be the children. Doesn't every child deserve a mom and dad? But what about natural marriages that don't create children? They are the exception, not the rule. The only relationships that do create children are between a man and a woman. Wherever same-sex marriage is promoted, schools subject your kids to mandatory homosexual curricula. your business and your taxes fund homosexual relationships. Your freedom of speech is gagged. And your religious freedom is overruled. The government has no compelling interest in legally promoting same-sex marriage. None. But we have every reason to continue to promote natural marriage. But what about equality? The law already treats everyone equally. Every citizen can marry someone of the opposite sex. But is it fair to promote natural marriage but not promote same-sex marriage? Yes, the law treats all people the same, but it doesn't treat all behaviors the same. Same-sex marriage and natural marriage are different behaviors with different outcomes, so the law rightfully treats them differently. Isn't this discrimination against homosexuals? No, this discriminates against behaviors, not people. For example, are you being discriminated against when the government promotes police work, but you never become a police officer? No, not at all. We all benefit when police work is encouraged. In the same way, people who don't marry someone of the opposite sex are not discriminated against when our government promotes natural marriage. In fact, we all benefit when natural marriage is encouraged. But what about tolerance? Yes, same-sex marriage advocates need to be more tolerant. Homosexual relationships are already tolerated in the US. They can already commit themselves to each other until death do them part, without government endorsement. But only the union of one man and one woman should be promoted, because it alone is the foundation of a civilized society. That's not bigotry, that's biology.
Wow, that's powerful. Very powerful. Let's all stand if you would. I want to make sure you get the time to get on over to the gym. Listen to this. Therefore, if anyone is in Christ, he's a new creation. Old things have passed away. Behold, all things have become new. Now, all things are of God, who has reconciled us to himself through Jesus Christ and has given us the ministry of reconciliation. That is, that God was in Christ, reconciling the world to himself, not imputing their trespasses to them, but has committed to us the word of reconciliation. The Bible goes on to say, for he made him who knew no sin to become sin for us, that we might become the righteousness of God in him. Jesus Christ died on the cross for our sins. There is nothing that you can do that God's blood cannot cover. But what would be horrible is for you to hang on to a lifestyle. It doesn't have to be same-sex attraction. It could be lying. It could be pride. It could be adultery. It could be fornication. It could be unbelief. Jesus Christ died for us. Put your faith in me. Died on the cross. Rose again from the grave. Trust him. He'll give you a brand new life. Father, we thank you, Lord, for the ministry of Frank Turek. And Lord, how you have used him and are using him makes us challenges us to make us think, causes us to check our foundations, logic and reason on fire. This is fantastic. God, you are the God of order, and you're the God of life, and you're the God of forgiveness and grace and mercy. You're the God of holiness, righteousness, and truth. And Jesus, without you who are the way, the truth, and the life, you said it. And I quote Jesus, no man comes through the Father but through me. How narrow is that? How wonderful is that? How available is that to your heart now? Accept Christ today. Call out to him. Thank you, Lord. In Jesus' name, and all God's people said, amen.